I won't mince words here. You know, they broke the law. The fact is, when we pass a bill, it's signed into law. They are required to do these studies. It is not optional.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we continue our series of conversations with New York State legislators previewing the new legislative session. My colleague Lucas Willard speaks with North Country Republican Dan Steck, and I'll speak with Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from the 39th District in the Hudson Valley. We'll start with Lucas's conversation with Steck.
I think we have a very unique session ahead of us, and that's mostly because we have a brand new governor. She's been governor since August, but this will be Governor Hochul's first legislative session, her first state of the state, her first budget that she's preparing. So, especially on the heels of the Cuomo administration and all the issues that he had, and his reputation and the way that he worked or didn't work with others, we have an opportunity to pivot here now with a new governor. So it'll be very important to see how she communicates. Does she build trust not only, with the public, but also with the members of the legislature? So I think that, that is going to be crucial. And then, of course, we are, finishing up the second year of COVID and all that that's brought to us. And, I think that, going forward on that, between an opportunity with a new governor and the issues that COVID has presented, we need to be focusing on our economy, jumpstarting that, doing what we can to transition so that we can recover both as a state and also as individual communities, just trying to get their economic feet back underneath them. So many businesses have been struggling. Employment situation is just very difficult right now, attracting people. And I think a lot of that has been COVID and COVID-related policy that needs, a new look, and we need to adjust and try to move forward.
Yeah, let's stick with COVID for a moment. I guess, do you have an assessment of how the administration is handling the COVID crisis right now? There's a spike in cases as the holidays, we're moving closer to New Year's now. Also, we saw in your neck of the woods in Queensbury, the mass vaccination site reopened at the urge of local leaders at the Aviation Mall. So I guess, what's your assessment of where the state's going right now with how it's handling the COVID crisis?
Well, certainly, I think between, Omicron and the four seasons, the change of seasons, and heading in the winter and the holiday gatherings, I think that spikes, in the ebb and flow of the prevalence of the virus was expected. I think we've all learned a lot more about virology over the last couple of years than any of us ever thought we'd want to know. Omicron is doing what they said that they thought that the virus would do over time, which would be spread easier, but not be quite as dangerous as earlier versions. Our hospitals are hanging on, but it's been, you got to remember, this has been like a war of attrition for them. This is 2 years of a meat grinder for all of us, and that includes our hospital and our healthcare workers. I think that the idea that we could afford to say, no, we don't want your help, to healthcare workers that weren't vaccinated was a mistake. The idea that somehow we're going to dip into some reservoir of people from the National Guard and they were going to be able to provide health care, I think was overly optimistic. But with that said, again, I think people have rallied. I think our healthcare system has rallied. But again, I think they're frazzled. It's been 2 years for them. I think making the vaccine available and easy to get to for anyone that wants it is important. I know that local leaders throughout my district have been advocating for that. And I know that there's been pop-up clinics and pods in Clinton and Franklin County, as well as the one that was reopened in Warren County recently. Again, making it available to all that want it. So I think that that's a good thing. But, I'm still hearing people from all over the district and all areas of our economy complaining about the lack of testing materials. I've heard it from schools. I've heard it from businesses. That the supplies that we need to test for it, 2 years into this, we shouldn't be scurrying around for testing supplies. We should have that. And again, that's not that the state of New York doesn't make that. That's a national procurement challenge and issue that, frankly, right now, we should not be scrambling to try to find testing supplies. But that is a big issue. I think that's an area where the state, and again, we're not the sole actor here, the federal government can and needs to be doing more.
Is it hard to get the testing supplies, like an at-home test kit or even just a regular PCR test in the more remote parts of your district? You have a very large district in the North Country with some towns and villages that are further flung from the Northway or the population centers.
I've heard from every corner of the district that it's difficult. So it's not just difficult in the most rural or smallest communities in the North Country, all the way to Queensbury and Glens Falls, the larger metropolitan, if you will, area of the district. People can't find testing materials. They come in and as soon as they hit a store, they're gone within hours. Whether it's buying a retail, test, or waiting for a week to get in to get a PCR test, people are having difficulty getting tested. Again, that's an issue everywhere, not just in the most rural parts of the district.
I wanted to talk about just some of the mandates and some of the policies that the administration has implemented. For example, the mask mandate is going to be reviewed, reassessed on January 15th. What's your opinion on that mandate and some of the other ways that the state government has approached its response to COVID?
Well, Lucas, you may not remember, but before I was in the legislature, I was in local government. And, there's always somebody that's going to come and say, present a problem and saying the solution to this is to pass a law. But if you don't have a plan and a mechanism and a will in place to enforce a law, then you're really doing a disservice. And I see a lot of parallels with a mask mandate that the governor rolled out with my experience at the local level, that somebody would say, there ought to be a rule saying this. But if you can't enforce it, or you're not going to enforce it, and the word gets out that it's unenforceable, really at that point, then it's a suggestion. So if the state wants to make an appeal that masks are a good idea, strongly encouraged, that's great. But if you're going to start saying we're going to mandate this and we're going to put that responsibility on counties that can't handle it. And again, these are not counties that are just saying we don't like the governor's political affiliation or we don't believe the science. These are county governments that are saying, look, we want to be helpful here, but we do not have the resources, the staffing to do all of this. We can't set up vaccination clinics. We can't contact trace. We can't do our normal everyday public health jobs. And on top of that, now run around and enforce a mask mandate in every gas station and convenience store and public place. So these are not people that are just trying to thumb their nose at the governor. They're saying, look, we'd love to support this, but we can't. Now people will debate, whether or not masks, how effective a mask is, if you're not wearing an N95 mask and you're wearing a cloth mask, and everyone's got their opinions on that. I'd be very curious to see, what is the science actually saying on the efficacy of the masks. But, it's very easy to just say, I'm requiring you all to do this, and then walk away from it and let the local businesses, figure it out on their own and have businesses calling and complaining about one another because now there's some sort of competitive advantage to that. I really think that we've set up like a Hunger Games or a Lord of the Flies situation when government throws a mandate out there without support. And I think that's the shortcoming that I see here is that good idea or not a good idea to say masks are required and good luck with that. You're on the hook to enforce it. Again, these are not people that are looking to fight with the governor. They're just saying we can't do all of it. I think the governor heard that and walked it back a little bit. And again, as soon as you start walking it back, now people are hearing the message. Okay, so they're really not serious about the mask. So, you start sending confusing or mixed signals like that to the public, and you're going to create confusion, and that's not helpful right now either.
Yeah, I guess what would you say for folks who are listening? What's your suggestion?
Well, I think that that people, the virus is real. It's dangerous. It has killed, the numbers aren't where we want them to be. If you can believe what we're being told, the news about Omicron, that it's spreading easier, but it might not be as dangerous. And, you know, I say that with a big asterisk. You know, I'm not trying to say that it's not dangerous, but you know, the virus is mutating and along a projected path. And I think the same things that, you know, we just good hygiene, social distancing, being mindful that, hey, we're living in an environment where this virus is out there. I think people need to be cautious and make good decisions. But if you tighten it down so much where you crush the economy or people are now not going to get their basic other medical needs dealt with, that they're putting off getting cancer screenings or things like that. I mean, that they're walking into other health problems because, we've tightened down so much, with our response to COVID. So I think we need to try to look at this as commonsensically as we can, you don't want the cure to be worse than the virus.
Okay, now let's get to my talk with New York State Senator James Skoufis, the Democrat from the 39th District.
Our top priority needs to be getting out of the pandemic, and alongside that, making sure that we're focused on rebuilding the economy, making sure that we're focused on jobs. But none of that can happen if we're in a surge, and that's where we are right now. And so we need to get more testing. You know, I've been very vocal with some of my Hudson Valley colleagues that we need a state mass testing site back up and running here in our region. We don't have one right now. And so, you know, that needs to be the immediate focus. And look, going into next year, January through June, the surge is not going to last through June. What we have to be focused on as Democratic majorities are, in my opinion, our kitchen table issues. And we've got a DOT capital program we're going to be negotiating. Let's make sure we put the federal infrastructure money and state money overlaid on top of that to best use. We've got to make sure that we've got strong schools, continue phasing in the CFE. We've got to make sure we've got strong hospitals. We've got to repave our roads. We've got to, as I said before, get people back to work. These are the issues that my constituents care about, that I think most New Yorkers care about, and we can't lose sight of these core essential kitchen table issues heading into 2022.
Governor Hochul has said that her priority is keeping kids in schools. It seems as if your concern over the state of testing in the Hudson Valley, might be complicating those efforts. Do you think that she can pull off her goal of not seeing a return to remote classes as students head back to school this week?
Well, I share that same goal. And look, what happened in 2020, it is what it is. And in many cases, it needed to happen. But so much learning was lost via Zoom with kids out of the classroom that I think we all need to be doing our best to make sure that does not happen again under any circumstance. But yes, testing is key in order to identify where the virus is spreading, where we need to take additional actions, perhaps. We need to first understand, that there's a severe lack of testing in some parts of the state. Working with Senator Reichlin Melnick and Assemblyman Zebrowski, we've had a number of conversations with the chamber, the executive branch, over the past week, trying to push them to reopen a site in Orange or Rockland counties west of Hudson. And I think we're making progress. To their credit, the chamber, they, I think, understand that there is this void. But there's no question about it that not having proper testing has severe repercussions beyond just a simple matter of fact of, how many people tested positive. And certainly one of those repercussions is it makes it more challenging, to deal with all the issues related to keeping kids in classrooms.
Are people in your district abiding by the recommendations for, wearing masks indoors and then, of course, the increased focus on trying to get that last stubborn portion of the population vaccinated and boosted?
It's hit or miss. You walk into, some retail outlets. For example, I was at Woodbury Common doing some holiday shopping the other day, and just about everybody was masked.
How was the traffic, by the way? Sorry to interrupt.
Around Woodbury Common,
yeah,
it's much better than it was before the $150 million infrastructure
right.
project was completed a couple of years ago. But there's always going to be traffic around the mall during peak holiday season, so it was bad. But you go to places like that, everyone's masked. You go to some local grocery stores, and you know, it's maybe 50% of people are masked. And so, you know, a lot of it is unfortunately whether the establishment is enforcing. Because, you know, as we've seen, once you leave New York City, the county governments seem to be reticent at best to be enforcing these mask mandates. And so it's up to the local establishment. And some of them are interested and some of them are very uninterested. So it is hit or miss. And with vaccines, look, you know, the simple matter of fact is there is a small segment of the population that believes vaccines, you know, do things to them that, quite frankly, they don't do to people. And, you know, there's hesitancy, there's fear, there's conspiracy-laden thinking. And I, you know, at a certain point, you know, I don't know how you reach some of these folks. We did see down in New York City especially that some of the mandates to the public sector, cops, firefighters, et cetera, they worked in respect, you know, in terms of, you know, actually getting folks to get the vaccine and not lose their job. When faced with the prospect of losing their job, it turns out some like 95% of the unvaccinated wound up choosing to get the vaccine instead of losing their job. And so, you know, I think there are more things that we could do on the public policy side. But right now, there is a persistent, small, unvaccinated group of people who are making it very difficult for us to get through this pandemic.
Aside from the testing issue, which you've raised, how do you think Governor Hochul is handling the pandemic in, you know, the first few months that she's been in office?
I think she's handled it very well. So much of this, there are a lot of moving parts, right? There are federal things that need to be done. Certainly there are state level policies and actions that have to be put in place in order to safeguard against a surge like this. There's local enforcement that, you know, it would be helpful to have. So not everything is within Kathy Hochul's control, but I think the areas that have been within her control, she's responded in a transparent manner. I think she's doing her best and her administration are doing their best despite difficult circumstances, but more needs to be done. And, you know, we talked about some challenges here in the Hudson Valley. We need to ramp up more quickly. We need to respond, more effectively. But I think she's done an exemplary job with the cards that she was dealt.
Speaking of the executive branch, the investigations committee that you chair just the other day released a new study looking into how the executive branch carries out mandated state studies, and it found that's severely lacking. Can you break that down for me?
Yeah, sure thing. So, you know, this is, I think a lot of my colleagues and I, we suspected, we pass all of these quote unquote study bills. We direct agencies to evaluate issues that we feel are important. And we never hear about these studies after we pass these bills. And so I think a lot of us suspected that, you know, many of them are just not happening. They're ignoring our legislative directives. Or if they are being studied, these issues are being studied, certainly they're not communicating the results to us because we never hear what happens after we vote on these bills. And so, you know, our committee, the investigations committee, we took it upon ourselves to really inquire on this issue. And so we looked at bills that were passed, these types of study bills between 2016 and 2018, and found that a full 41% of these mandates were ignored. Department of Health was a particularly egregious offender. The large majority of the studies that they were required to undertake were ignored. And I won't mince words here. You know, they broke the law. The fact is, when we pass a bill, it's signed into law, they are required to do these studies. It is not optional. And so we found that almost half of studies that we directed agency undertake were ignored. And the other half, or a little bit more than half, they're not posted on websites. They're not really effectively communicated back to the legislature. And so, you know, we put forward a number of recommendations that we feel would be better practices, best practices moving forward. And, you know, the report concludes that the legislature ought to take action against these agencies. There ought to be repercussions, consequences, when they ignore the law, when they ignore legislative will. And I believe, you know, one action that should be taken moving forward when we have flagrant offenders like the Department of Health over those couple of years is we should sue. They're ignoring the law, they're violating the law, and let's have a court compel them to follow the law if need be.
Well, there are so many different state agencies and different buildings and different departments. So was this a policy? Because it seems like you found more than just a couple of, bad apples here. It seems like, by and large, maybe ignoring some of these directives was just kind of part of the plan.
So I do think it stems from the culture of the previous administration. It's not a secret that the previous administration, the Cuomo administration, they did not hold the legislature in very high regard. And I believe, these executive branch agencies reflected that culture, where there's just simply, okay, the legislature told us to do something, maybe if we get around to it, we'll do that study that, they just passed a bill about. And, I'm hopeful. I do believe that the current administration, Governor Hochul and her team they're instilling a very different culture within the chamber, within their executive branch agencies. And so I am hopeful that there will be a new day, not just on these study bills, but on all engagement in between the legislature and the executive branch. And make no mistake, over the past few months she's been in office, there have been marked improvement to that end.
Let me go to a couple of other areas. I want to circle back to discussion about the DOT capital plan that you mentioned earlier. It seems like kind of a good year to be working on that, given the historic federal investments in infrastructure. How will state and federal funding be put to use together?
So the past 2 years, we have basically done these little one-year extensions for a DOT capital plan, when historically they've been five-year DOT capital program, 5 years of investments looking outward. And so I am hopeful, I expect there to be a five-year, or at least a far more robust than a one-year DOT plan that's negotiated over the next few months as part of the budget and in immediate aftermath of the budget. And yes, it should be a very healthy capital program, because not only are we looking at an infusion from the federal government when it comes to infrastructure dollars, but we have a very healthy budget, in terms of sales tax receipts and income tax receipts. And so, my hope is that as part of this focus on, as I started the interview with you about on kitchen table issues, infrastructure, rebuilding our roads and bridges, getting people back to work, the DOT capital program touches on a lot of those elements. And so I am going to be very supportive of a very robust plan. And certainly, as a state senator, are going to be looking out for projects in my district as we negotiate.
You have a bill for the next session that would require students across the state to be tested for dyslexia. Why and how would that work?
Well, the why is certainly apparent to any family that has a dyslexic child. And that is, this is something that often goes undetected until the student is much further along with their education, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, even high school. And, it's something that requires a more specialized, a more tailored type of learning experience. And so to detect it when you are in kindergarten or first grade is certainly good for that student and good for that family, but it's also good for the school district, who doesn't have to then try and play catch up and make up for so much lost time. And so, it's certainly, I think, the right, the moral thing, the ethical thing to do to help these students, but it's also the financially prudent thing to do, because once you're trying to play catch up, it's a lot more expensive on the back end as well. And so, for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of children who have some form of dyslexia in New York State, this kind of bill, working with Assemblyman Carroll, would be a game changer.
Talking to a lot of your colleagues over the past couple of weeks, I sense that there's a little more optimism heading into the new year than there has been in past years. And throw 2020 out, that was very unusual. But, the state is more flush given the federal COVID relief funds and infrastructure investment. There's not a recession that we know of right now. We're sort of coming out of that. So do you expect things to operate any differently? Will the budget talks be more smooth than they have been in past years this session?
I think they will, certainly for certainly some of the reasons that you just outlined, although I would just point out that much of that money, the COVID relief money, infrastructure money, that's not recurring. You know, that's not something that's going to be with us every single year that we can count on. A lot of that money is one-shot money, and that's why a lot of that money needs to be spent on one-shot expenses, like a DOT capital program, for instance. But yes, you know, I expect a healthier budget negotiation in part because of the influx of cash that we have. I also expect a much smoother budget process because we have a normal person in the governor's office now who, you know, is just not looking to take a sledgehammer to the legislature every chance that they get. And so, you know, the governor has demonstrated that she is very interested in collaboration. You know, I've witnessed that as her team and I have negotiated over many, many chapter amendments with my bills over the past number of weeks. And so I am hopeful. I think, you know, many of my colleagues and I are optimistic that it's going to be a new day in Albany and a new and refreshing type of budget negotiation, given you know, that we've got Kathy Hochul in the governor's office.
I wonder if that can last, though. And the reason I ask is the governor and the legislative leaders are sort of by definition in an oppositional role in terms of the budget. And I mean, that dates back to, you know, Pataki v. Silver, and governors ever since then have gone to war with the legislature at one time or another when it came down to budget time. And Kathy Hochul came in August, so she hasn't had to deal with the lawmakers as much as she will going into the new year. Are you hopeful that that will last?
I am, for a couple of reasons. First, unlike most previous governors, she actually comes from other layers of government here. You know, Andrew Cuomo was, you know, he ran HUD, then he ran for attorney general and became governor. He was never a legislator. He was never in local government. And you know, Kathy Hochul was, you know, she was on a town board. She was a county clerk. She was in Congress as a legislator. And so I think she views the role of the legislature in a very different and more positive manner than most of her predecessors. But certainly there will be disagreement. That is human nature. Even, you know, as we're all Democrats here, in a Democratic conference in the Senate, there's a wide range of opinions. The point here is, though, that you could disagree without being disagreeable. And I do believe one of the other reasons why I'm hopeful that this can last is because Kathy Hochul's style, it seems, is to not be disagreeable. Or perhaps, you know, only as a last resort. And so, you know, I am hopeful that this can last, but certainly time will tell. We'll see.
New York State Senator James Skoufis is a Democrat from the 39th District. Senator, thank you so much for giving us your time, and we'll check in once the session's underway.
Always a pleasure. Happy New Year.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.